Welcome to the FinTech Scaling Show. This podcast is sponsored by the Growth Platform Framework. B2B FinTech startups accelerate customer acquisition and set up business operations to scale systematically. When you're ready to grow, reach out to us at richard@ipractitioners.com. Now, over to the show with Richard Dosey, founder and host. Hey, what's up, everyone? Today on the show, we have Martin Kassin, founder and CEO of Upvest out in Berlin. Prior to founding Upvest, Martin has held both COO and CPO positions and has also worked in the investment management space over a number of years. Really excited to have you on the show today, Martin. Welcome.
Yeah, nice to be here.
Awesome. So listen, let's kick off the show and maybe to paint a picture for our listeners, let's talk about your early career and maybe let's focus more on how the early part of your career is helping you succeed at Upvest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's an interesting question. I was asking me the same question recently, and I think there are probably some bits and pieces that helped me a lot also than founding Upvest and being successful. So I actually studied business administration and then joined very early on in 2009 a private equity fund. At the beginning, just as an intern, then analyst, associate, investment manager, and operating partner at the end of the day. And I really learned the basics of being a good investor. So really looking at the companies, doing due diligence, looking at different sectors, thinking about diversification, working hard was also part that I learned there actually. But also, you know, being very structured in very complex and dynamic environments. And I think there is a similarity when you start a business that you also, especially when you're in a big market and a growth market, that you get overwhelmed with data and responsibilities, and you have to actually maneuver through this. And I think this is what I've learned early on in my private equity career, plus the domain knowledge. You know, I think I have a pretty good feeling what is a good and what is a bad investment in general. Sometimes it's really dependent on timing, but this helps me also to have a pretty decent and mature conversation with other market participants in our investment space.
Cool. And tell me a bit more about the structure. You mentioned that you need to be very structured as an investor, and this has obviously helped you going forward. So tell me a bit more about that.
I think there's always the challenge as a founder of a business that you have too many opportunities and you have to decide what kind of road you would like to take. And while it's easy to say that you have to focus, you also have to actually do some analysis around this, and you have to combine this with your personal emotion / vision. And I think what I learned in the private equity space is to gather the data that I need pretty quickly and to put them into a concise format to convince me, but also the team around me and investors. And this is always a challenge because the bigger the company gets, the higher the bars. And I think you need to be incredibly fast in actually getting the right information, asking the right questions to convince also, you know, the big boys later, which basically means amazing managers that can actually work then for Upvest, but also big investors and big customers.
Yeah, some interesting points, and I'll pick out one, asking the right questions. And maybe we can dive into that in a bit more detail. I was wondering, what type of questions were you asking yourself when you started the journey at Upvest?
I didn't ask myself too many questions. That was probably an issue because I was super excited about starting something in the blockchain space. So I invested a couple of years earlier into this and could see that there are a lot of developers, but also traditional investment bankers that jump into this industry and get super excited about it. And I think at the beginning, it was more excitement, and then the structuring piece came thereafter. And I think the biggest challenge you always have is, how deep do you want to go with your questions? Because you always have a tendency as a founder to go 80-20. Mm. And sometimes you have to make really bold decisions where you literally just have 60-70% of the whole data, but you have to make a decision because people rely on you. And then sometimes it makes sense to make a decision that other people can run, despite the fact that's not the right decision. And sometimes it also makes sense to fade out and to really think about the big picture. For instance, when you think about, let's say, the culture and the mission, it's not something you want to do 80-20. But if it's about, let's say, you have a customer, the first customer in industry, do you really want to actually optimize the pricing for this customer? Or is it actually more like an iterative process with the customer together and you're happy that you can close it, right? So it really depends on the situation. But I would say actually the mid to long-term pieces, you have to have peace of mind and really think about it and get actually 90-100% of the data. And if it's more about, you know, an iterative process, you can even, you know, survive with 60-70%.
Yes. And you mentioned that, you know, when you started in UpBest was more excitement than anything else. I mean, what other motivation did you have in setting up UpBest?
Well, actually, I wanted to build a really cool company that I would get really excited about working at, and to also create an amazing team around me and with me to actually do something that's really meaningful in the world. So it was not necessarily just to know about building a great product. It was also really about building an amazing team and have fun with these guys.
And what do you mean by an amazing team and have fun? What are you guys doing that's maybe slightly different to other startups and scale-ups out there?
Yeah, that's super interesting because you can compare us to traditional investment banks potentially, because we are kind of like an investment bank that offers the services via an API to fintechs, but also banks in the future. And typically the culture of a big investment bank is very different than our culture. So We are pretty open. So we share a lot of information. We have open source software. We have public documentation. We don't believe in this concept of trade secrets so much, but more in fast collaboration with our environment. So this is something where we actually say we wanted to build something unique, which is pretty much, you know, building a digital investment bank that's very open towards all the market participants. The second one is we believe a lot in trust. So We try to empower the people that we have as much as possible and have a very high entry barrier. So pretty much our hiring process is super, super tight. But when the people are actually in the company, we trust them a lot to an extent that, you know, people are even surprised. So, for instance, I don't read even the documentation for the fundraising anymore. I trust my CFO. He just comes to me and asks me, hey, those are the 3-4 bullet points. What do you think about this? And a lot of people actually in the industry actually ask me if I'm crazy because, you know, I'm a CEO and founder of the business. Why I'm not reading the docs? Because, yeah, I hired the right person. I can trust it. And so I think this goes a long way in the organization. I think the third one is I would say that none of us is doing this the first time. So very often you hear in startups, it's about the hustle, tough execution and so on. I think this is true, but there's also a human touch to this, and experience, I think, matters. And I would say that we as an organization, as a startup, are pretty mature. Most of us actually have families, built business before, and really care also about, you know, doing it in the right way. And doing it in the right way basically means, you know, think a little bit more long-term about these pieces and rather hire a person before we actually work, let's say, 60-80 hours, and rather prioritize and think about the structure before we actually run into something and realize, okay, this was maybe a wrong decision. So I'm really proud about our company that we actually have an amazing team of successful people, entrepreneurs that have done it before and get excited to do it again with this time as well.
Some pretty cool stuff you just mentioned there. I'm going to highlight some points that I made here. One is fast collaboration. Another is trust, empowerment, human touch, and life. So you put all that together. How does that play out on a day in, day out, month in, month out basis at UpBest? It sounds like it's pretty empowering to use the phrase that you just used.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that there were three phases at startups, at least in Germany. I'm not sure how it was in the UK and in the US specifically. But the first phase was all about execution. So you copied an idea with Rocket Internet in Germany specifically, and you got the smartest people from McKinsey and Goldman there and just executed. So it was all about execution. Then thereafter, there was a phase where the copying was not so fruitful anymore because a lot of people actually copied this approach. And then it was all about product. So people were saying, hey, we have to build the best product. Then it was all about getting product managers, optimizing the product at the customer and so on. And I think there are also a lot of successful companies came out of, and I still think it's very important to have an amazing product. But I think we come into the next phase, which I would say the people phase. Right now, I don't compete necessarily about the best people, best products. I compete actually about the best people. And that's my challenge because 95% of my costs are people. And I think we actually laser focus on that specific element, which basically means getting the best people, get them excited, empower them, and let them run. And I think this is a very different approach to many other startups and fintechs I have seen. And it has a compounding effect. I would even say we became something like a magnet because we have so incredible people in our organization that now more and more people actually come into our organization, that more and more investors trust us, that more and more customers trust us. So I think it comes out of this nucleus that we want to create a very sustainable organization with amazing people And people feel this. And this nucleus is getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And I personally think it's the right approach. It's an expensive approach because we pay top 1 to top 10% of salaries. And we give people the time to actually get where they have to go. But I personally think in the mid to long run, this is the way how the successful company, especially in the fintech space, will have to be built.
Tell me more about how you get these talented individuals and these talented people, how you get them excited and how you maintain that enthusiasm and excitement as you continue the journey.
Yeah. So typically the people that get excited about Uplet, so first of all, Uplet is not for everyone. So some people will hate our company for sure. And for many, many reasons, I would even totally understand. I love it to work at Uplet. My colleagues love it as well. But nonetheless, you know, sometimes you have to be a little bit discriminating also to get the people that fit to your organization. I would personally say, you know, people that come to Upfest, they get really excited about the mission that we have. So we built something that hasn't been built before, which is pretty much an API to embed any type of investment product into any app that has users and cash. And I think every individual considers investing at a certain point of time and understands that it's important, either for creation, the creation of wealth, but also just for fun purposes, I would say. And we build like really fundamental infrastructure around this, which eventually can serve hundreds of millions of end users, eventually billions. And the people that come to us typically have worked in the related industry for either they worked in a consultancy or investment bank or had their own fintech or worked for, let's say, a payment company. And they understand that what we're building is pretty big and would like to join this mission because they think it's needed. And I think the second element why the great people come to us is because we have a very tough hiring process and have a pretty high talent density at Upfest. So amazing people want to work with amazing people. The moment you actually have mediocre people around you, the company turns sour. So that's why we actually focus always on getting the best people and pay also the top price for them. And we're pretty transparent about this. Yeah, and the third one is probably the fun element. We have a lot of fun.
We've spoken a lot on the FinTech Scaling Show about the hiring process, and it'd be interesting to hear what you mean by a tough hiring process. What are the steps that you guys go through to make certain that there is the right fit?
Yeah. So I think there are a couple of things we try to do differently, and we are not finally there. So to be 100% honest with you as well. So first of all, we take hiring very personal. So it's not something where we just say, put a job description on a website and say apply, and then, you know, it goes through the HR process. This is not how we work. When we want to hire someone, actually, we do it ourselves on LinkedIn, all the managers. We try to work with our network. We work with our investors to get the best people and also approach them and go into pretty quickly into an intense dialogue with potential candidates. For us, the quality is far more important than the quantity. So we looked at our numbers. One of the applications, around 0.2% of those that we hire. But once it goes via our network, it's more than 10%. So that's why I think we save a lot of time when we just do it ourselves. And we love actually also the journey and to have this dialogue on WhatsApp, Telegram, LinkedIn with the right candidates. I think this is probably different than in other organizations. Yeah. And I mean, there are many things I can add to this, but I would rather like you to ask me some specific questions there.
No. It's fine. And once they... You know, you've obviously go through the applicant process, they sign up, or you find through LinkedIn or, you know, a network. You know, once they land in Upfest, how do you make that individual gel into the team and succeed?
Yeah. So one part is typically when we hire people, they join in 3 to 6 months later. And what is important for us to onboard these people before. So we have already a dialogue on let's say, WhatsApp, Telegram, email, LinkedIn with these guys and share some information. So we call this a pre-boarding. Then all the information is shared. They can get their computer, they get their swag and everything around this. And they get also actually embedded into our OKR cycle. So they can join OKR presentations already. They can join our Slack already, although they actually still work for another company if they can and want to. And I think when they start, there is an onboarding procedure. It depends a little bit on the person, but for instance, when I hire other managers, I really take like a full day where I run them through everything I know and what I think is the most important for the next 12 years. And I think all of the managers are doing this the same way with their employees. So we try to actually also make this to a certain extent personal, the onboarding experience. We have to still improve this, especially knowledge sharing, because our industry is growing so quickly that, you know, sometimes when you have something in a wiki, this document is completely outdated a couple of weeks later. But I think in a nutshell, what is important is the personal and soft touch that we have there. So we like the dialogue. We actually, despite the fact that we work mostly remotely right now, we try to, you know, block time for this as well, for feedback sessions, and try not to be transactional. So not just saying, hey, you come here, you have to do this and that, but more having this an open chat about, you know, what are the big topics we should focus on and how should we actually get there?
Yes, it sounds like the personal touch seems to be coming through quite a lot. And, you know, speaking of that, I guess that also plays a way in how you guys have approached scaling in general. And it would be interesting to, you know, maybe dive into your philosophy on scaling and get an understanding of that.
Yep. I think when we want to scale our organization, we have to analyze what are the resources with the highest return on investment, and those are people. So you can actually look at specific KPIs. I personally think they're the most important KPI for us is how quickly can we hire the best people in the market and not revenue or profit and so on. Because at the end of the day, we're still at an early stage in a gigantic market. And the better the people that we get and the faster we get them, the more impact we will have sooner. And I think the huge difference is between hiring, let's say, a mediocre person versus an absolute rock star. This rock star eventually can be 10 times, even 100 times faster. And if you then utilize this person well in the organization achieves the results faster. So I think for us, scaling is really about getting the best people, keeping them, growing them. So this sounds pretty simple, but it's in practice very difficult.
And as you go through growth and you get those people and you build your team, what other structures or maybe processes are you looking at putting in place to support your growth journey?
So we work with OKRs. Personally think that you don't need a lot of processes to be successful. I rather believe in people and culture. So nobody likes to follow processes in the world. And nobody reads the document about processes. But there are certain things, you know, that are important for the organization. So some values eventually. And we like to teach these values pretty early on. So for instance, in the security or in the engineering team, it's very important that our software is very secure. And this is communicated early on and also embedded into code with reviews and so on. I think this is then more impactful than having a process which writes something down that you have, for instance, to follow certain steps. But on the, let's say, on the structural piece, we still believe in OKRs. We have quarterly OKRs and break them down by the individual teams. Typically, we start with a leadership kickoff every OKR cycle. We talk about the most important topics you would like to conquer in the next quarter and try to understand the dependencies between the different departments. And then we try to break down also the resources that are needed for this and prioritize. And once this is agreed with, you know, objectives and key results and the classical playbook, then we let the teams run. And every 2 weeks, we have an OKR presentation on Friday at Upfest, where we don't really present necessarily just the progress, because the progress is shared automatically in specific docs and BI tools. It's more about, you know, what have we achieved and what have we learned. And at the end of the OKR period of this quarter, then there is a grooming. And yeah, if we have achieved, let's say, 80% of these OKR results in total as an organization, then we also celebrate this. If we have achieved 90%, then we even go fully crazy.
Champagne comes out.
Exactly.
And you mentioned understanding the dependencies between the departments during this process. What do you mean by that?
I think we're a very specific business. So you cannot even separate sales from product, from engineering, and because it's all tied together. So at the end of the day, we sell an API to banks or future banks, so fintechs partially as well, that don't have the license yet, but want to eventually get it in the future. And there's so many questions, there's so many dependencies with the client that we have to mimic in our organization. So let's say that there is a fintech that wants to offer a certain investment product, then obviously there is a sales part where we, you know, sell them our product, but then it goes quickly also into a product part where they would like to know, okay, what kind of product features can we integrate? And then it goes into an engineering part where the engineering teams of the fintech have to work with our engineering teams, plus the security part, plus the compliance teams and so on. So I would say that our company is partially even the product, because even at some of the clients, we are literally sitting there with 6-7 specialists and try to give them a lightful experience. And this cross-functional work is very different, I would say, from other companies where you say, okay, I'm doing customer success and I have my KPIs, and once they're achieved, then it's done. Or I have my sales target, I achieve my sales target, then it's done. For us, it's actually it never stops because it's such a cross-functional work.
And how does that play out in sort of reality? I mean, I've heard on this show and, through my experience, I've heard some stories around how silos could develop as you scale up, because as you just mentioned, customer success potentially is just focusing on one part of the wheel where they should potentially be focusing on the full part. So it seems like this cross-functional methodology that you have going on here helps remove that silo problem that maybe so often pops up at certain points when we're scaling up. What are your thoughts?
I think it also depends on the culture. So we encourage people to be very open and to share the knowledge as much as they can. So we applaud them even when they share the knowledge, and we applaud them also when they do mistakes. And I think that is really important. Then you have the second piece, which is technology. So a lot of the communications we have are on Slack, and we try to share them with as many as possible. Plus, everyone can actually join every meeting in the organization anytime. We also have the philosophy that we share all the information, even information that, sometimes are sensible, like investor reportings, to everyone in the organization, that everyone is up to date. Because I think the benefit of having access to information and not having to worry about what information you can share and you can't share is much higher than actually, creating some confidentiality.
And how does that play out with your teams? I mean, again, it might come back to everyone trusting each other, everyone feeling more empowered, and foster collaboration to the points at the top of the show, right?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it's also painful because because we have such an open collaboration philosophy at Upfest that some people just get annoyed because they get so much feedback, right? So you think you have something finalized, let's say a sales deck, and then you share it with the team, and then you get like immediately 50 reactions, which help everyone, getting better. But sometimes you also want to finish stuff. So I would say in general, if you have patience and if you actually have a certain resistance also to feedback, which most people have, I think, in our organization, then it's a good thing. But sometimes, it can be also a little bit painful because, people want to always collaborate and contribute. And sometimes it's also a bit too much, I would say.
And by the way, I mean, speaking of teams and collaboration, I mean, as we know, when we scale up and when we're growing, things are changing. So can you tell me how your team is managing that change on an ongoing basis during this sort of growth journey?
Yeah, I think in every quarter, I would say we have a couple of big surprises since I founded the company. And I think this is a repetitive thing in the startup. So I think just accepting that things will work out different than you have originally planned is important. And not, just write it on a PowerPoint for the next 3 to 5 years, because in practice, it never works like this. There's always something that happens, then there's Robin Hood and GameStop, which changed entirely our industry, or eventually Bitcoin skyrocks, and then all of our customers want to have cryptocurrencies. So there are a lot of things we literally cannot plan. And I think people have to be a little bit mid to long-term focused on things and not be too reactive on short-term trends. I think this is important. And we try to educate and also everyone in the organization by saying, hey, this is our mission for the next couple of years. And this is the big picture, that they always have this anchor point, even if things don't work out so well. But I would also say, if you actually work in an organization where you have incredible people around you and you have a mission, it's not so difficult if things sometimes don't work out. You can still, go home and saying, hey, yeah, at least we tried. Tomorrow is another day. I go to work and work with amazing people and try to do something differently to win this time.
I hear you. And tell me, of all the things we've been speaking about, we've spoken about teams, culture, hiring, what do you think is the most important element for our listeners to understand if they're on either the cusp of scaling their business or they're in the midst of scaling?
Get the best people and let them run. I think that's the most important I can give you as a tip. If you compromise on hiring or if you compromise on paying, you will always get mediocre people, and they will drag down the good performers, and then actually the whole organization will be mediocre. If you get the best people and you don't let them run or you don't trust them, they will get frustrated and cannot unfold their full potential.
Excellent advice there. And tell me, I mean, as you guys continue on that growth trajectory, what questions are you asking yourselves and what factors are you considering as you move forward over the next few months and a few years?
I think there are a couple of elements where timing is important. So it's a question sometimes for me personally. So how much money should we raise to be even faster? And then there's also the question, you know, do we slightly overstaff to be ready for the future growth? And if we overstaff, you know, and then the growth is not coming, how will this impact the company? I think there's just certain sensitivities that I try to, you know, optimize in my head, but sometimes you can't because you don't have the right data around it. That keeps me busy at the moment. I would say that something that I'm very excited about is our strong people focus at the moment. Mm-hmm. And we really mean this. It's not something we write on a PowerPoint. I think you can ask everyone at Upvest how important this piece is for us. It is new to many people in the industry because we have certain principles that are very new to, let's say, the fintech or I would even say the investment space. And we don't yet know if they play out in the long run. Mm. It's more like a belief. So this is something that keeps me busy as well. And if they work out, amazing. If not, yeah, then maybe it was the wrong approach. Yeah,
yeah, I like it. We've got to test it, right, and see how it plays out.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, though, with the people piece, you will know in a couple of years because it's such a long-term game.
Mm. Yeah, no, I hear you. And as all entrepreneurs and leaders, we always continuously look for things to learn from. And a lot of us like reading books or favorite YouTube videos. So, you know, I'd like to ask you, is there any book that you've read in the recent past or currently reading right now that you think would be a good one for our listeners to pick up?
Yeah, for sure. I love reading books. So I have kind of my personal quota of reading one book per week. And one book that really impressed me recently was The Art of Possibility. It's pretty much a book that summarizes that you always have an option to go either downwards or upwards in every decision you make and in every interaction you have in the world. And there's some interesting views in it and principles, like, for instance, that everything has been invented by humans and that you can turn every negative situation or perceivable negative situation into something positive when you're open towards it. And if you use this technology, this technique, then you actually progress much faster. And more importantly, you're far more resistant because in every situation that you are, you don't think about this negatively. You think about this, okay, well, how can I get the best out of this and make it a positive outcome? So this is a really impressive book, I would say, for people to read. A second book that I recently read as well is The No Rules Rules from the Netflix founder, which I really love. It's pretty provocative, but a lot of the things that are written in this book, I really like to also embed into our organization. And what I also do besides reading, I listen to a couple of audiobooks. And I think that the Harvard Business Review summaries of the top 10 essays towards many of these mentioned tips are also really, really helpful. So for instance, the top 10 essays towards culture, top 10 essays towards communication, because they help you somehow as an entrepreneur to structure different approaches. So, yeah.
Yeah, some really cool tips there and something for our listeners to take away and hopefully pick up and read. But listen, as we come towards the end of the show, how can people get in contact with either you or the guys at Upvest if they want to?
You can always connect us on LinkedIn anytime. We will always reply.
Awesome. Now, listen, Martin, it's been amazing having you on the show. I've thoroughly enjoyed our conversation and, you know, really wish you guys good luck this year. All your scaling efforts. I think it's going to be an amazing year for you guys. But again, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, thank you very much for taking the time.